Welcome to another episode of the No Time to Be Offended podcast, hosted by Matt Christopher and Dan Adler. Settle in, listen, and learn what drives them to share their knowledge and experiences with the hope it gets you thinking about a different perspective on life. Over to you, Matt and Dan.
Hello, podcast listeners. It's Dan and Matt.
It's my birthday today.
Is it really?
Yeah.
I didn't know.
Oh, you did so, you fibber.
Oh, congratulations.
I'm 53 years young.
I was going to say 23? 53?
I've got a head like a drops of lucky.
Oh, mate. You've got a head like a blind cobbler's thumb. I heard that one. That was funny.
That's, yeah. I'm really happy today. I mean, this is fantastic for us to be able to get together, do this podcast, and also to all of you, thank you for your love and support on this project. So it's been very vulnerable, it's been fun, it's been stressful, but thank you very much, and we've both enjoyed it. So you're sharing today, 13th of May, my birthday, 53 years young. To everybody else that's having their birthday today, happy birthday.
Happy birthday to you. Hip hip hooray. Well, let's get into it. Now, I want this to be rewarding, a present for you.
Matt, I like presents.
Yeah, you deserve it. On this day, 53 years ago,
yes.
Rewind the tapes all the way back to where you are today. Let's reflect the life that was and is Matt Christopher and how the events, good and bad, have shaped you to who you are today and what you've learnt through those experiences, good and bad.
You're not going to hypnotise me or anything. It sounds like a regression. Is it a regression?
Well, it could be.
I don't want to sound cynical, but I'm not looking directly in your eyes, Dan.
Waving a watch, a pocket watch in front of your eyes.
How far would you like me to go back?
Well, there's been some things that, you know, I've learned through speaking to some of your friends about, you know, for example, you're quite a prolific Muay Thai fighter.
I was, yeah.
And you did really well. And some of your friends, like, do not, you know, if you ever got in a fight, you want to have Matt in your corner because he'd get you out of trouble.
Is that right?
But there's things like that. Want to talk about no scars, no stories.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know that about you, that you were a fighter.
Mm.
You come across as this big, cuddly teddy bear.
Exactly. Focus on the big, especially around the middle.
But there was something that took you down that path where you learnt that sport. And
national sport of Thailand, actually.
But your ability to fight and defend yourself, and that becomes almost a weapon which you have to control because you've got to be careful how you wield that. And there's other things like, you know, our bad backs and, you know, I want to talk a little bit about my shipwreck experience, which not a lot of people know about. So on the subject of no scars, no stories, the fact that these things have happened to us gives us the ability to be sitting here right now to talk about it. But instead of it feeling like as though it's a negative of what's happened to us, we can take that and flip it into a different perspective, a positive one. And it's a reward to now sit here today, the day of your birthday, and think about what did you take away, what was the learning experience from either failing fast or the pressure that you put under or a situation that happened to you that was outside your control, the things that you've learnt from that, at which become the reward, the prize, the present, that you can now put in your asset portfolio of life and say, you know what, when this happens again, I know what to do. So let's talk about that. Does that sound all right?
Yeah, that's fine. I don't mind. I'm in the hot seat today.
So I'm going to ask a couple of questions to you. Take me back. When did this Muay Thai thing come about? And at what point did you really feel like as though you were in your sweet spot where you could step into the ring and hold your own against someone? And then when did it stop? Because we don't talk about that anymore. I don't see you doing it anymore.
No,
was it because of your bad back or what was it? Tell me a little bit story about the Muay Thai.
Yeah, the Muay Thai story. Okay, well, it was friends of mine were doing it already, so they invited me to come along. I'd never done any martial arts, and I'd left home. So if I may just go back, there's a necessary backstory.
Where are we?
Well, that stage I was about, rough guess, maybe 21.
I
was in Brizzy, came to Brisbane from the Sunshine Coast. The backstory was of this, I think it's really important, is that I was raised in a very, very strict religious household. That kind of thing was just unthinkable. I essentially didn't even have a birthday until I was, I don't know, maybe late 20s, something like
that's
that.
That's why it's so significant, us saying happy birthday.
Thank
you
very much. Yeah, so I lived, I'm not saying that as a negative, it just was. That's the way, that was the religious upbringing I had. And so when I left home, there was these new experiences that I was open to. And people that I knew that were not of particular religion I was raised in were involved in all those kind of sports. I was never even allowed to play sports.
Really?
No, never. But anyway, so they were doing this martial arts or whatever, and that was frowned on. Of course, it was more than frowned on. But I went along, and I had no expectations. I really enjoyed, was very dynamic. In Muay Thai, you really, it's not just about doing movements. You're hitting pads, light sparring very early on, and that was tough. I went because my friends were going. I went 5 days a week. And, of course, you start in the beginner's class and then you slowly grow and you have gradings, to same as like any other martial arts. We didn't have belts, we had singlets, but there was something to look forward to, and the sense of community and camaraderie, especially in martial arts, is really, really strong, and that was super encouraging. So, in a way, it was never about, initially was never about fighting. It was about exercise. It was about doing something exciting. And then just slowly, and I can talk about that whole process, but slowly it just became my ritual of life. It also had because it comes from Thailand, it's got a very heavy focus on Buddhism as well. And that's a very calming thing. And that's something I'd never been exposed to before. So it sort of, how can I put it? It just saturated into my soul. I really, really enjoyed it. I can tell you about the gruesome stuff if you want to hear
Please
it.
Please do. Tell me a story about something might have happened that might have
happened. Okay. So all up, my training history was 10 years. And I got to black with red. So that is the second highest sort of level that you get to. Red is the highest. I was black with red. So I suppose maybe it's in karate would be like one of the dans in. So you got black belt and then you got all your dans going up. Anyway, I was going for black at the time. The particular gym that I was in, when you got to the senior ranks, the gradings were actual fights. Okay, they were fights. So you did rounds in the ring. It goes, oh, okay. Well, my club had, I think, maybe 3 Queensland champions in different divisions and probably the second and third rank within those divisions. I was fighting a particular guy. He broke my ribs, smashed my teeth. But
you're punching with gloves on?
Yeah, but your shins are not protected, so you're allowed to use your shin. Unbelievable.
So in some ways, you had come out of a tumultuous part of your life.
Yeah.
Leaving home.
Yeah, very restrictive. It wasn't tumultuous. It was just very...
You can't do anything.
You can't do anything. Everything's bad and you can't do anything, and it's very fear-based, and the outside the four walls of the church, so to speak, is terrifying and frightening and evil. And then you're out there and you're a little baby because you've never experienced... I think this is the conversation. Yeah. You've never experienced anything.
You're starting your life all over again.
You are. You have no idea, and you've never had the grounding of knowing what the real world's like, because all you've heard is no, 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 no. Look, I had no TV. When I got older, I had to go back, watch all the movies. Yeah.
Really?
Like Star Wars or thing, never watched them. There was no radio. I didn't know any of the songs.
They block you out from the outside
world. No, there was no. That's devils. That's bad. So I had no idea. So I actually had to rediscover all of the music of the era.
At the age of 20?
Oh, and on, yeah.
Is that when you left home?
Yeah. I met people who were, not all, but many of them were pretty rough and tough people, and I would be always taught, like, they're scary, bad people. And then I just, being in that club, they became such close, loyal friends. So what I got out of doing martial arts was, yeah, of course you learn to fight and all of that sort of stuff. But what I learned was really, in a real sense, is the fear of someone that looks rough or got tattoos or they're terrible, dangerous people. Well, actually what I saw was the opposite, is that they were very loyal and amazing. And one of the things was, because I didn't drink, I said, no, I don't drink. Or whatever, they'd never force you to. They say, oh, okay, mate, that's great. They would do it. And I'm like, oh, you're meant to be forcing me to be. You know, it was really, I found my contact with people is in a really weird way for me. That was a really good way for me to be exposed to different people. Yeah, I look back at those 10 years just with just awe of the people, the dedication, their loyalty, sense of humor.
And it give you purpose turning up?
Absolutely, and I needed that. I came from extreme discipline in one way, and then going into martial arts the other, I needed that.
To funnel.
Absolutely. I needed to know I need to turn up every day to training, and we had a little passport, little card, and every time you went, you ticked days off and you needed X amount of time before you're allowed to grade, and you knew you were great. So it gave me, I was out of home, and it really gave me discipline that I really needed.
It's almost like going to the army.
It is, absolutely. Well, it is. It is really a military discipline. So I needed that going from extreme religious discipline to I needed that discipline going forward. So to me, I look at it not as not the fighting aspect. It was more just the discipline. The discipline is really, really good. So
Phase out?
It was time. Yeah, I was at 30.
Your priorities changed.
Yeah, priorities changed. I couldn't give the time to it. And also, I'd done what I wanted to do. I was really satisfied with what I'd done. And actually, after that, I started training other people myself. So, went into coaching, as in PT stuff myself. So, yeah. But that's a long time now. I haven't done anything for a long time.
Great share. I'm very interested to learn more about that stuff. And it reveals a part of you which I didn't know about. Because obviously, in order to fight in a ring against those big, scary, guys with tattoos, you're going to have to either overcome your fear, anxiety, or insignificance of why am I here and can I do this? And I'm going to have to drum up the courage to face this person, but also winning humbly and being gracious in defeat and learning how to shake someone's hand that's just broken your teeth
and ribs
and say, good fight, let's do it again next week.
Yeah, it's preparation. End of story. I mean, like you essentially fight yourself. You can only prepare well enough, and if you've done everything you can and your opponent beats you, you can say, I did the best I could and it wasn't my night, and you'll see that. But if you know that you hadn't prepared, boring things like diet plays such an incredible part of that. Your pre-fight regime, it's a difference between winning and losing. And that is a real metaphor for business, for everything.
I agree. It's,
you know, you study your opponent. Even back then, we would, if we could get some footage of the person fighting, okay, seems to have very strong hands or not so good legs, or his kicking game is really good, but his hands are weak. You're trying to do that. So you're doing that analysis. And I'm just saying, for business, that mentality is really important, because really a true fighter, it's never personal. People think it is. It's not. You get personal with somebody, you're not going to think.
And you're not thinking.
You're not going to breathe. You're not going to listen to your corner. You're going to...
Your fight or flight kicks in.
Absolutely.
And you're half
adrenaline goes through the roof, and you come out and you're finished. So you're tanked. So it's actually quite the opposite to what people think. You've got to be in control, thinking, moving, making adjustments.
Breathing.
So, yeah. And in businesses, go back to business, but, you know, it's very much like that.
Mm. Sport, yep. Whether it's soccer, team spirit, picking your team members up if you're down, being able to understand that you might win some, lose some. Some things, the referee's in the other person's corner and they're just blowing the whistle and you're getting all the penalty cards. Moments in time where you've just got to go and pick yourself back up and be resilient.
Absolutely.
Because they're... will be another day,
yeah,
for your time to shine, and it's to go away and not lose but learn. Be proud of the way that you've handled yourself in front of others as an inspiration for how other people should act as well.
And I think what I was taught is one of the first times I ever saw a fight night where you got different people, different levels, and two guys got in the ring. It was their first time, you know, you always try to match up people who are, especially if they're new. You want to get people with the same skill level. This is not fair, okay? So, and one guy got in there and he wasn't in condition and you know, he lost the fight, you know, but the other guy really didn't know how to fight either, so it wasn't too bad, if you know what I mean. And people were, oh, look at that guy. Some were saying, in our club, were saying, oh, you know, look at that guy. He's, you know, hopeless, you know. But I remember our trainer said, don't you ever mock anybody that gets in the ring. He got in there when 99% of the population wouldn't do it.
Isn't that great?
And there's nobody else in there. It's just you and that other person, and that is real guts. And I thought about that, and I went, yeah. And I went later on, as I matured in the game, and I'd hear that, I said, don't you dare, don't you mock that person. He or she, that takes a lot of guts. And that's the thing, you know, it's like, you haven't lost. Yes, you lost the fight, but good on you. Like, it's amazing to face your fears. You don't want someone to be seriously hurt, especially for first time in, but...
It's so easy for the culture to pick on people from the outside.
Oh, absolutely.
On the sidelines, they're sniggering and kind of laughing at you.
Absolutely, mocking
and,
you.
You know, it's like the tall poppy syndrome. How dare that person go and put their hand up to be a leader and stick their head above the parapet. Of course, it's easy to just throw slings and arrows at them.
Oh, easy.
It's easy. But it's, you don't see those people standing in the ring, you know,
no,
being prepared for judgment. One change of topic, I'm going to talk about my shipwreck story, which anyone who's hung out with me at a party, they probably have heard this story. But for those people that haven't, it has quite a dramatic change in the agenda in the brochure that we got. It was designed to be a two-week surfing trip on a yacht. There were 13 people on the boat, three Indos and a captain, and the rest were all surfers from different parts of the world in Australia and from the Gold Coast to Sydney. And it was a fully paid trip. I was sponsored by Billabong, Oakley, Nev Surfboards at the time, and we had five surfboards each and all different sizes, and we were going from Bali, obviously from Australia, to Bali, to Jakarta, to Penang in Sumatra, getting a ferry to the yacht out in the Mentawai Islands, or the Mentawai Islands, depending on how you pronounce it, and that's where we got on our 52-foot yacht. Now, I'd already knew that my graduation of my university at Bond University, that the day of the graduation was going to be when I was on the yacht. So I was going to miss my graduation.
Oh, wow.
But, you know, I thought, why not go on this amazing adventure instead of sitting in a hall room with all these other people?
Was that amazing?
It's made for a great story.
Oh, good. Let's continue.
We pulled up at this beautiful surf break, and it's called Hollow Trees, or HTs. Lance is right, for those people that know. And it's just one of the most picturesque, beautiful bays. It looks like everything you can imagine. Palm trees, white sands, and a right-hander that was like, you know, 4 to 6 foot, and it was just peeling. And it, as we putted up and we pulled up, we dropped anchor and we said, look, if there was ever anywhere that we should get shipwrecked, this would be it.
You didn't say that, did
we
you?
We said that.
Great.
Now, whether we manifested that or not.
Yeah, I think you did somehow.
We had 4 days of awesome surf, and we were about to kind of wrap things up and go back to the harbour to get our ferry back, go back home. We were sleeping on the deck of the yacht because it was very hot. It's like 36 degrees. You're on the equator.
Right.
And there's no wind and it's still. It's a beautiful night. We've had Jack Daniels and we've had playing U2 and having lobsters from the reef.
Oh,
and
wow. Yum.
Just living a really great life of freshly caught fish, and we had a chef on board, sunburnt, young guy, you know, 19 years old, and here we are.
Did they have skin cancer then, or wasn't invented? Or
we were surfing 6 hours every day, so we were fit and healthy and just having a great time. And 1 o'clock at night, we got woken up by the Indonesian guys, and they said, you've got to go downstairs into the hull of the boat because there's going to be a big storm coming, big winds blowing everything. So down we went, and I'm sleeping in the bunk on one side of the hull. And my mate Aaron Pinniger, he's sleeping on the other side of the hull. And as we're lying there, we feel this big... And we looked at each other and went, that's not a turtle or a log. Let's go and check upstairs at the bridge. Yeah. And we had looked to see how much water's under the keel of this 52-foot yacht. And there's 1 foot of water. We were parked out in the middle of the bay.
Right.
With 2 anchors down. And a tsunami has come and picked our boat up. Lifted the boat up and pushed us into the impact zone where the reef is. And next minute, this big wave just goes straight through the boat. And
you're joking.
We're in the kitchen area and there's pots and pans and everything just going like white water
through the way actually through the boat.
It actually almost flipped the boat over. So we've gone, holy crap. It's just alert, panics. Everyone's on now. Lights are turned on. We ran downstairs, got my bum bag with my passport and my wallet, grabbed my wetsuit, like I had a little short john, a reef booty and a flipper. And we literally all got to the back of the boat and jumped off the back of the boat because the next wave was about to hit.
Oh, wow.
And it's 1 o'clock at night. It's pitch black. We can't actually see land. And so we're in the middle of the water and we had to... God. The captain stayed on the boat and he shot a flare off. Flare went up into the sky and it showed white on the horizon, and that was the sand. The flare went out, but we knew the direction to swim in, and we swam probably 100 meters before we put our hand on the sand and had a roll call, each person making sure we were accounted for.
Yep.
And I couldn't see the guy swimming next to me because it was cloudy, middle of the night, there's no other lights around. And so we finally made it to the beach, and then we just watched our ship get pushed up high and dry on the reef.
Was the captain still on the boat?
He jumped off at that stage as well. But the sun came up. We're sitting there. We've got nothing around us besides palm trees and coconuts. And we eventually got the locals from the village came and helped us to get everything off the boat sitting on its side on the reef.
Yep.
Now, we hadn't told the harbour master where we were. So nobody knew where we were surfing, where we were shipwrecked. Right. We had no communication using the walkie-talkies in or out. And at this point, we got the EPIRB off the boat and shot the EPIRB working so that the satellites are telling anyone in the area that you've got to go and save these people. 4 days went past and no one came to help us.
Did
no
you have
boats.
Water?
We boiled the water out of the ocean. We had coconuts and we had Pepsis and other cans of drink that we got out of the boat.
Right.
And 2 minute noodles. So we had our pots and pans. We'd get the salt water. We'd boil the water using, you know, a fire. And we set up our little tarpaulin on the beach and we would sleep there on the beach. 30 meters away was a stagnant swamp. I got bitten alive so bad that I came back and 4 months later I came down with malaria, which almost killed me.
Right.
2 years
Dan, what's the treatment for malaria? Just I'm very interested.
Well, there was a drug that the doctor wrote away to the government and gave this really high-powered drug that kills whatever that parasite is that sits in your kidneys or your liver. Okay. I can't remember, but it's a recycling. It's a cycling thing. So 2 years to that day, to that week, I got it a second time and they hit it again and I haven't had it since, so thankfully. But we woke up the next morning after sleeping in our tarpaulin. I was sleeping in a mosquito net. Next morning, we woke up and on the wet sand, you know how the water goes up and then goes back, there were big cat prints, Sumatran tiger paw prints.
Are you serious?
Big and like, you know, the size of a cat print. Imagine five times bigger than that. And they were like all the way up the beach.
Near you guys?
In front of our tarpaulin.
Oh, wow.
So from that night on, we made sure we had a big fire going 24 hours a day. And in case a plane comes over, they can see us. 4 days go by. No one's come to get us. We're now trading our T-shirts for the local villagers who are going out and getting lobsters and bringing them to us from the reef, and we're eating our lobster sitting on the beach and boiled water.
They didn't have any water to give you, or
it's just a really remote island. It's not like it's Brisbane City Council plumbing.
Right.
So we ended up saving ourselves. We got the rubber ducky off the back of the boat, put extra tanks of petrol because we got that out of the bilges. And the captain, the local Indo that spoke the language, an engineer, they got up really early and they went around one side of the island. And then they came back that evening. They said, you're going to be saved, guys. There's a boat, a big fishing junk that's going to arrive tomorrow morning. And it parked itself out in the bay. And then we just did rubber ducky runs from the beach to get all our stuff off the beach. Left the boat high and dry. The villagers would have taken that apart and used all the wood. And then we went from there back to Penang, flew back to Jakarta, Bali, and were saved. Now, that same tsunami hit Richie Lovett and Richard Dogmarsh when they were in Grudgegan. They had, the wave was so fierce that it picked up a shark cat catamaran boat that was parked in the bay and put it 300 yards into the jungle.
So this was a fully fledged
It was
tsunami.
On the news. Right. It was on the news. And my mum and dad, they were like, this is the same area, kind of basically Indonesian islands, that now G-Land, which is the next island west of Bali, news was coming back to Australia. This wave had just gone straight through these houses that are on stilts, and the guys, Richie Lovett, was sleeping in their mosquito nets, just getting hit by logs. And they didn't get any feedback on where our boat was, and so we were getting no communication back because we're shipwrecked. But anyway, fast forward, great story to tell.
It's amazing.
Ended up being an 8-page article in the local surfing magazine. But I think the lesson for me was going out there and living your life and discovering what might be makes for a really great chapter in the book of life.
Were you close to, did you fear at any moment that you could lose your life?
No, I don't think we did. I think that the guys that I was hanging out with, we all kept a really upbeat demeanor, an upbeat spirit about it. There was definitely anxiety. We didn't know what was going to happen. This was unknown foreign territory. The captain actually ended up going to jail because if you sink a ship, by default, you go to jail. If you shipwreck and sink a ship, you go to jail. So we remember, I mean, Aaron and I were standing there when we first pulled up and you could literally get a rock and with a pretty steady throw, you could hit the reef. And we said to him, isn't this a little bit close? We're parked in a bay, and we were parked over here, and the reef is breaking over on this side. And he goes, I've sailed these waters. Don't worry, I know what I'm doing. Fast forward, look what happened.
Right, he's in prison. You nearly lost your shirt and your life.
But we just had confidence for some reason that we'd get through it, and we just had to not think about the negatives and just enjoy being shipwrecked like Survivor Island.
Has that experience, how has that informed your life going forward?
Oh, look, as I said before, I think by me saying I would really love to go and do something that other people don't do, and I think in some of the other podcast episodes I've revealed that drives me, being able to do something that not a lot of people get to do. The bit that I'm also learnt is that there's an unhealthy aspect to that, which is jealousy. I do things that a lot of people can't do or won't do because I want to prove that I'm better than them.
Okay.
Right? It's a competitive spirit in me.
Fair enough.
And that is part of two sides of the same coin, is I'm jealous of them. If I think, oh, well, you've got that, well, I'm going to go and prove just how good I am. Right? That's an unhealthy side of that. But if you look at the opportunity that was given to me, and thank you, Kira Surf, Billabong, that paid for the trip, and the photos that I've now got in my book from that experience, and the memories that I'll always have of the mateship of, we felt like it was like, you know, doing the Kokoda Trail. You know, it's the spirit of togetherness that we got through it. And when we did land in Bali, geez, that was a great experience when you're like back to eating ice cream and pizza and beer, and it's like, oh, how good is this?
Do you still keep in contact with any of those people?
Yeah, I do. Aaron Pinniger, I think he's in Belgium now. If Aaron, you're listening to this, still one of my best mates from school.
Wonderful.
I congratulate him on making those decisions to move from the Gold Coast. He was one of the best surfers on the Gold Coast, again, sponsored by Kira Surf, and they shaped all our boards, except this time around, I was sponsored by Nev Surfboards, so I was still kind of part of their crew. Yeah, it's going back to, just like you with Muay Thai, surfing was my thing, and being part of that clique on the Gold Coast and going on those little adventures was something that I was super proud of. I don't surf as much as I used to. I know, I don't surf at all, really, to be honest with you. I've given it up compared to how I used to be.
Do you miss it?
I do miss it a lot, and I think it was my bad back which caused a lot of that frustration of not being able to do things the way I used to do them. But it's similar to you, priorities change. You start focusing on your job, focusing on getting ahead in life, getting married, you know, having kids, buying property, all the things you're told you're meant to do. And then you start to neglect your health, and you're not keeping yourself as fit and keeping that life balance of what's exciting and driving you as a little child or young man. I am constantly now reminding myself that I need to do more of that to balance that, because otherwise what's the point of living?
But do you think, like we've been talking about those scars, whether it's breaking your ribs or, you know, getting shipwrecked or so forth, do you put yourself in, we've put ourselves in the situations where there is risk, okay?
Yeah.
Where things can go wrong. But what we're saying is we've learned so much from that. There's many, many other stories that we've got. Do you think that when we settle into the comfortable, dangerous middle zone, do you think that our learnings are actually diminished?
Absolutely.
You know, like it's we now can talk about what happened back in the day, but I mean, is that what's happening every week to
us? It's still a metaphor for life.
Yeah.
And that's why I was really excited to go with John Warclate and Rob Bryce and Ben Langfield, the crew, to Papua New Guinea and go to that surf resort. We're now planning another trip to Papua New Guinea next year. It's going to be a boat. Sounds familiar. History repeating itself.
Yes.
Anyway, so when John's like, you serious? You want to do this? I'm like, yeah, let's do it. And again, facing your fears.
Good.
So, yes, there's many things that could go wrong in Papua New Guinea. We survived the first time around. But this time it's like, okay, well, it's another reason to get fit, to get on the surfboard, to look at our equipment, get excited, feel young again. So I'm looking forward to that.
Oh, wonderful. So do you think that clearly we're in a risk-averse world where everything is about risk management on everything, life itself? Do we need to, as a society, embrace not just the potential of risk and potential harm, but should we really be chasing after it? Is it just something for extreme sports people that they do it, or what's your view on that?
Well, if I said everything in moderation, that meaning behind that would be different for different people.
That's true.
right? What I can withstand as far as pressure, resilience, getting back up when I get knocked down,
yep,
I think I've proven that.
Absolutely, you have.
Is different compared to other people. Now, at the same time, I'm not an SAS soldier that's being put in the front line, being having bullets fly past their head. So what they can withstand and handle is different, again, from what I can do. Everyone's sit differently on their own bell curve. So there's got to be a balance between, you know what, this feels good today to recover, reset, and go again. And then when the time comes, prepare for battle, just being a parent.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You know, when February comes around, it's school again, and you've got to buy all the books and the school uniforms and sign up for boxing and trombone.
Yeah, absolutely. And dance and everything else. So she's going to be a ninja ballerina that plays trombone.
Some people just getting out of bed in the morning is a battle. They've got to psych themselves up. And, you know, cost of living, we've talked about that. That's causing a lot of problems for people. We've spoken about it many times, but even today and going forward, it's not going away quickly. So each week, each month is going to throw the challenges of life at you. And we've spoken about this before, that the higher up the tree you go in the order of importance, the bigger the problem become. You have to expect and be ready that life's going to throw shit at you.
Absolutely.
And instead of looking at it like as going, oh, woe is me, why is everyone kind of picking on me and why has this happened to me and Murphy's Law, that's happened again and, you know, my life is just shit and I hate life, right? You could look at, you know, I look at some people's lives and I'm like, geez, you've really been put under a lot of pressure and challenges have been thrown at you. Absolutely. But it could just be that that's life, the universe, giving you these opportunities to overcome it and learn from it. So at the end of life, you know, I'm hoping we're halfway through it, Matt.
So do I. Yeah, so do I.
And we've got so much more to learn. Learning every day, aren't we?
Yeah, I'll be 106 years old when I die. How's that? I'll be happy if I'm halfway through.
I'll see you there.
You will.
What else do we want to talk about? Or do we want to just kind of keep it short and snappy?
I think it's short and snappy.
Short and snappy was good. We've got a lot of feedback saying short and snappy was good last time. So we hope you've enjoyed this conversation. I hope it's... You've had a good birthday so far.
I have.
It's halfway through your day.
Yeah, exactly.
And we've got a birthday cake upstairs, so we better go and light some candles.
Really?
And sing
okay.
Happy birthday.
Awesome.
So happy birthday to you.
Thank you.
And I'm really pleased that we've met each other and we can now celebrate your birthday. So, Matt, congratulations.
Thanks
for doing this podcast today.
Thank you very much, guys.
Thanks, listeners. See you soon. Bye.
We hope you enjoyed listening to this episode of the No Time to Be Offended podcast. To follow us, like, and subscribe. And you'll find more content on all popular social media platforms. Search No Time to Be Offended. Stay tuned for the next episode. Until then, we hope you get the best out of your life.